The views and opinions expressed on Analyze This are entirely those of the on-air participants and do not reflect those of the station's board, management, staff, or underwriters.
Yeah, that's what I thought I came about. I like that for you there. All right, we're back here and Analyze This. Welcome back. And we got some programming notes before we get back into this great discussion with Malik. So I want Malik to know that your fan club done chiming in already. So I'm going to give you some names in a little bit for you to have fun with. PBS News Hour at 7 p.m. That takes us up to 8. And then at 8 p.m., it's only apropos that tonight, the governors, right, explore the life of one of the Virgin Islands' most popular elected governors, Cyril E. King. That's from 8 to 9. And then face-to-face, going back in the days, right? Ruby Rouse, right? We explore the life and achievements of former Senator Ruby Margaret Rouse. She was a senator from St. Croix. Then Independent Lens from 10 to 11:30. Explore the story of how a rookie alderwoman led the passage of the first ever reparations for slavery bill in Illinois, right? That's from 10 to 11:30, and then Beyond the Canvas from 11:30 to midnight, and I'm a Poor and Company comes out midnight tonight. There's no time to unforward on Sunday, you know what I'm saying? So it's all good. PBS News Hour at 7, Governors at 8, Face-to-Face featuring Ruby Rouse at 9, Independent Lens at 10 to 11:30, and then Beyond the Canvas before we get to midnight, and I'm a Poor and Company. And having a great discussion this morning with the one and only Malik Sikhu. Good morning again, Mr. Sikhu. Glad to have you on, man.
Morning, Neville. I speak both Santomian and English. I'm going back and forth. So Santomian is too bad.
Hey, Malik, don't forget to know. Over there, I gotta drive a car. And over here, we gotta drive a car. You know what I mean? So that's how
it's
it
a
is.
Big difference. It's a big difference. Ours drive better than yours.
By the way, your evil twin sent me a text, Louis Sylvester. He said good morning, and he had me to know that two are born the same day. What going on?
Yes. What? Our parents had the same thought at the same time. You know how I go. Go ahead.
No, and then another former co-worker, my good friend Peter Mack, Peter Francis, and you, and he were fireman together back in the day. The good old days. You are working with Funky Man back in the day?
And you should come, of course. I worked in the fire. Actually, I served U.S. Navy and the
yes, you did say so the last time, correct? Yeah.
I brief stint, and I would say my 2 years as a firefighter were the two best years of my life.
That's what you're talking about, man.
Yeah.
I know. You got firemen bringing water to the eyes. Firefighters bringing water to the eyes. Hearing you make that statement, I don't know. So you're touching people.
No, I see. I'm gonna explain it in a minute, but I want to take it philosophical for a minute.
Go right ahead.
I've been accused of something talking about.
I yield to your wanting to be philosophical.
I want to be philosophical. Mm-hmm. There's an axiom. That's a big boy. Axiom we sometimes say that when you want people to love themselves or to love others, they must first respect themselves or respect others. And you only can respect yourself and others if you know yourself and know others. So it's in that order we approach educating our people on themselves. So when we talk about VI history, it is not just an academic activity. It's not the same as studying sea eggs, jellyfish, and hard nose in the ocean or Lake Dendite trees. Those are important flora and fauna. It's important to study the natural sciences. When it comes to studying your own people, that's a different pursuit. And so I want to say that I believe everyone in the Virgin Islands, in principle, agree that we need to know our history in the broad sense. I take the position of everyone who lives here, even those who just came here from a different part of God's earth, they would like to do something about the place. The difficulty we have, however, is how to do it. So I noticed some of the activists, they pose the issue as if, you know, me versus you, that the other side doesn't want to know VI history. In truth, everyone wants to know VA history. The question is how to do it, how to make VA history, VA heritage, VA culture a field that can inform all people here, from the toddler to the person in the golden stage.
You know, I want to chime in there, because this is to me, this is irony of the highest levels. I was having a conversation with a friend of mine yesterday, his mother and my mother, very good friends. We went to St. Dunstan's together. And he was referencing an article that he read about a conversation Joe Madison had with Barack Obama, right? And Joe Madison's a civil rights leader, Kali, the Black Eagle, right? But you just mentioned something that really has to do with communication, right? In terms of your history and people wanting, and the how variable is what you were talking about. Not so much, I mean, in addition to the what. You weren't knocking the what, but you said how. Yeah. And apparently there was a conversation, Joe Madison, I'm reading from a political article, because my partner sent me the article. He said, you were having a conversation with Barack Obama, and quote, and I said, Mr. President, you need to put it where the goats can get it. And he looked at me and said, what? Right? And he said, it's a phrase told to Madison by his grandfather decades ago after he came home for Thanksgiving break from Washington University in St. Louis. He was the first in his family to go to college, talking about philosophy, economics, and sociology, which is what our discussion is based on today. Right? He said, my grandfather looks at me and said, Joseph, will you put it where the goats can get it? Madison said, and Madison told Obama that story, and the president replied, oh, that's it. But here's how he defined it. He said, quote, goats eat down to the root. Take it to the root. Explain it down to the root. There's another way of saying it. Explain it to me like I'm in second grade. And he went on to say that public policy can be, Washington speak, very complicated. But how can you get people to move and act if they don't understand what you're talking about? And that, to me, right, is a microcosm of what you're talking about. Where if, in fact, VI history is so important and people want to embrace VI history, you got to be able to communicate to them at multiple levels, because everybody ain't the same. Goat luck and sheep luck ain't the same, right? And it's a classic example of what you're talking about, Malik Siku.
And I remind everybody that Pressure Bus Pipe has a famous line in a song that says that the VI people are people of great value.
Yes.
You say we stick together like what? Like Tom Unstu. Not Tom Brandon. It's Tom Unstu.
We had to choke a B up in there to be unique, baby. You know what I'm saying? So that's Tom Brandon.
And Madison Junior said me, and they don't say Tamon, they say Taman.
But not only that, are you take out a syllable or no? Two, we take out the syllable because it's a three-syllable word, you know. It's tamarind, but we don't cut it down to Taman and Tambran, respectively. That's good.
And I want to say this before I forget about the issue of their history. I'm aware that there's a big legal dispute in St. Croix. A few people have taken me to task about being that getting involved, and I've said publicly, very respectfully to these people who think that's the best approach, that I don't agree that we're going to address this issue in the courtroom. I think what has to be done is that the community, through the legislature, maybe create a task force or a commission to look at ways and means to revitalize the curriculum to include a VI focus, but it cannot be a VI focus in a parochial sense. We don't want for generals to be masters of the VI but unaware of the rest of the world. It has to be a way of enrichment that allow us to be more grounded in our reality, more knowledgeable of ourselves, love ourselves, at the same token know the rest of the world. We want the best of both worlds. We don't want to be so insular we don't understand our neighborhood in the Caribbean. We don't know the rest of America.
But you know something, Malik, though? I think what we need, right, is for, in this world of specialization that we're in right now, right, we need to actually have a humanities renaissance, right? From the standpoint that the basic subjects, right, you know, everybody want to be an engineer, a doctor, what all that stuff, right? But our main curricula when we were growing up was math, English, Spanish, history, and science. I think we need to actually encourage the public, right, to have a greater understanding that those foundational subjects are really what it's all about. And that will allow for the scope to be broadened and have that greater appreciation, in this case, for history.
Well, again, we agree. The question is the how. And I
correct.
Think one of our challenges is a touchy money issue. Mm-hmm. I suspect we have champagne taste and Kool-Aid pocketbooks when it comes to this. We the people I hear talking, many of them, they are correct in saying we need to expand and deepen our understanding of ourselves. I agree with that. The question now is, are we willing to fund what
we're
saying?
With the conversation that we had on Monday, Senator Noel Francis chimed in and said, you know, he has a mandate for a VI-centric civic course in high school, and Dr. Larson and Dr. Arnold are putting the curriculum and textbooks / workbook together, which is good, but we got a lot of literary, you know, ammunition, for the lack of a better term, in place right now, right? It's about the how. And you're absolutely correct in that regard. Which brings me back to something I definitely want to talk about. Because, you know, in America, they say money is the only thing, but timing is everything. Right?
Uh-huh.
Now, you know, we were purchased from the Danes 1917. But Abraham Lincoln, some 60 years before that, was looking at purchasing us back then. And of course, you know, he was assassinated, John Wilkes Booth, later on that year. Looking back at it with hindsight, the benefit of hindsight, you think we would have been a earlier purchase had that not happened, given how important they looked at the Virgin Islands as it relates to the Panama Canal and South America and all that stuff?
I would say yes and no. In international relations, there's always a confluence of factors that lead to decision.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the subjective, the individual dynamics of the leadership, as well as the objective factors. Objectively, if the United States had purchased the Danish West Indies, and at that time, the only two islands on the table would be St. Thomas and St. John. St. Croix was not a part of the deal.
Correct.
It may have had a positive impact for the United States. But for the VI, no, it would have divided us. So to divide us so that St. Croix remains Danish and St. Thomas, St. John, U.S., I don't think that would be good for us. It'd be good for the Americans, but not good for the Virgin Islanders. So I'm going to be a nationalist now and say that let us walk together. So let's get Tumbao together. Let's resurrect together. So if you're going to buy us as a whole package.
Mm-hmm.
Don't separate us. So I would say, for the American point of view, each desire, each attempt at transferring and acquiring, approaching the VI, from their point of view, It could have been good each time because U.S. is a growing global power. But for us, if you can divide us, no.
But you know, Malik, and that's why we're having this discussion today, because I always brag about wanting to be more learned at 10 a.m. than I was at 8, right?
yeah.
The public don't know that they had a sports-like negotiation back in the 1860s, you know, because... Right, they said in Denmark offered to sell St. John and St. Thomas for $10 million with an option for St. Croix for $5 million. Mm-hmm. Right,
that's correct.
And the settlement was reached for $7.5 million for the two islands. So, this is what you're talking about, right?
That's correct,
right?
That's correct.
Right, a favorable vote was taken in the territory as well as both houses of the Danish parliament, but the U.S. Senate declined to act. So we owe the Senate,
right,
as it relates to our togetherness, right? We owe the Senate a debt of gratitude, right? Because the cruise and them, the mainland, weren't a part of the deal back then, Malik Siku. This is the type of thing that I believe is so rich that people who may not instinctively or naturally embrace history, they would love hearing this type of talk. That's just my take.
Well, I never take it a step further. Again, you know, the VI perspective cannot be the same as the mainland perspective in terms of objective reality, and we are two different situations. And there's William Seward.
William Seward, that's why he was the Secretary of State, I believe, at the time.
Yes. He also was negotiating for Alaska from the Russians.
Correct.
And so because he was unsuccessful, not because, in addition to being unsuccessful because of that you know, situation with the Danish West Indies, he went to the Russians on behalf of the United States and got Alaska for the exact same price that they offered the Danes for two islands that, if you combine St. John and St. Thomas, is no more than 56 square miles. And Alaska is 600,000 square miles.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
So check this out, right?
Check this out. It was heard largely, right, that when the U.S. Senate declined to act, it said largely it is thought that the refusal of the Senate to ratify the treaty was based on the absence of full support for the necessity of this acquisition to safeguard American security and to advance commercial interests. So they had vision back then.
Of course. Well, but again, like I said, again, for us now, for our side, and keep going back and forth, for us, when you look at these discussions, because in my class, I teach a class called History of the Versions, History 342, I will pose essay questions to the horror of my students where I ask them to analyze the three attempts at transfer. I don't use the word Portuguese. Portuguese don't sound right in my modern era. It sounds like I being bought for slavery. I use the word the transfer attempt. That's a softer word, which means the same thing as purchasing. But I ask students to analyze the transfer attempts and explain what were the motivations. Now, for the African population in the Danish West Indies, they didn't participate. Who participated would be those who were the landed elite, people who had property, allowed to vote. They voted because they saw the commercial value of being a part of the United States.
The local term we like to use, the socialite them.
Yeah, and the elite, exactly. Eventually, Neville, by the third attempt, right, the progressive forces also supported the transfer. Guess why? The Ambassador Jackson and others believed that the United States had gone through a reconstruction period.
Correct. 1865 up until about... but I think actually a little longer. History will show that reconstruction era was longer than is documented. That's my interpretation. Yeah.
Actually, you're right because when Garvey was heading to New York to form his branch of the UNA, he wanted to go to Booker T. Washington because he believed Booker T., despite his political issues, was at the right path in trying to get African Americans to acquire marketable work skills and businesses and so forth. So the Reconstruction, though it formally ended in the 1870s, it still continued.
It continued, Malik, up until the late 1890s, early 1900s.
That's correct. So with that in mind, some of the heavyweights at a period say, you know, it's okay to be transferred. However, we must get a full seat at the table of the American democracy.
Correct.
And we're gonna pick it up
right there after this break. We got Malik Sekou joining us, VI History Month here. Analyze this. We'll take a break. Be back right after this.
St. Croix has something for everyone. With two locations, the Bank of St. Croix provides personal and business checking accounts, online banking, and mobile apps for banking on the go, a nonprofit community investment checking account, and a 24-hour banking cash management platform. Bank of St. Croix, Gallows Bay, Bank of St. Croix, Peters Rest, and online, bankofstcroix.com. For details about our nonprofit community investment checking account, our service specialists are ready to help. Bank of St. Croix, member FDIC.
As the news gets more complex and changes through the day, you need more than just a quick headline check. Here and Now keeps you connected to your world between Morning Edition and All Things Considered, as the news and the people shaping it are changing in real time. I'm Robin Young. Follow along on Here and Now, NPR News weekday afternoons.
from 2 to 4 on WTJX-FM, your NPR station in the Virgin Islands.
Hi, I'm Peter Sagal. You spent the week listening to the news. Don't you think you deserve to show off what you've learned on Wait, Wait, We Give You a Chance to Impress Your Friends with your knowledge of international incidents, political gaffes, and the latest advancement in German nudists? You'll be the life of the party or the death. Either way, you'll make an impression and you can thank Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me from NPR.
Saturdays at 1 p.m. and Sundays at 2 p.m. right here on WTJX FM 93.1, your NPR station in the Virgin Islands.
He said that black smoke was constantly coming out of the burn pits 24/7. And my reaction to it was like, wow, that doesn't sound very safe. I wonder what that's about. And in my mind, I couldn't imagine at the time that type of system operating could potentially harm our service members.
Journalism that seeks and reveals. That's On Point with me, Meghna Chakrabarty.
Weekdays at 1 p.m. on WTJX FM 93.1, your NPR station in the Virgin Islands.
And we're back here and analyze this great, great discussion with Malik Sekou, his second appearance and analyze this. And now we're expecting him back in a couple of weeks because we're saving the self-governance part of this conversation for part two of the discussion. All right, make sure I made that clear to Malik Sekou. If you're coming on in March, you go come on twice. And he said, okay, not a problem. Just let me know up front and let me know. I'll let you know what day is available. So, Malik, I want to thank you very much for hooking me up with this great, great discussion today and the second one later on this month. Thank you very much, sir. Appreciate that.
Yes. Well, I wanted to thank you. And I wanted to emphasize something that I think today, in the 21st century, we take a lot for granted.
Mm-hmm.
But our ancestors in the VA, and I would say in the whole Western Hemisphere, people of African origin in particular, they were up against some serious odds. And despite the level of repression and racism and, you know, negative political thought, mm-hmm. there was always a conscious sector in every place you find
in the region, yeah, man.
In the region, but in the whole hemisphere, and the region would have an overabundance. And I say this not to sound arrogant about Latin America, but the Caribbean basin, because of its unique geopolitics, allow it to be an incubator for world class scholars in Pan Africanist tradition.
Hold on, Malik. Say that one again. That one is some sweet. Say that one again for me, please.
We have an overabundance of this intellectual capital. So we're incubator.
Yes, sir.
And whenever I travel outside of the Caribbean, I go to conferences and in the rest of the world, I'm forever complimented on behalf of the Caribbean, saying the Caribbean produce the heaviest of the heavyweights.
No. So you're gone there, and we're bringing it a little bit into self-governance, but so be it. When you talk about the Cyril Kings, the Veer Birds, the Eric Williams, the what from Dominica name? The powerful one from Dominica? Rosie name it? Or that was St. Vincent?
I would say every island has its
That's leader. What I'm saying. And Bradshaw from St. Kitts Nevis.
All of them.
The list goes on and on.
And that's correct.
Which is why I am not surprised that mm-hmm. when you would travel and you sit down with these people, right? They are not only in love with the accent, they are mm-hmm. loved with the intellect that comes
that's
with
correct.
It. You know what
that's
I'm saying?
Correct.
And that's something that's that we continue to push here on the Table Talk on Mondays because our thing go way back. Let's face it, Alexander Hamilton is Nevis and St. Croix before America, right? And every time we go to the ATM, that's because of Alexander Hamilton's vision back in the day. That's how powerful and rich this thing is. Marcus Garvey. People like to talk about Marcus Garvey. Bustamante and Manly and them
that's
big
correct.
Names over there.
That's
I mean, that's everywhere
correct.
You that's go. Of course, everybody know Fidel because Fidel used to enjoy telling America, you know what I could do. But you and I know, Malik, that America allowed that for a reason, man. You know what I mean? Yeah.
let me tell you why. Because, you know, sometimes when I try to get a discussion with my students, I say, you know, the reason why we have this incubator role in the Caribbean Basin, and I tell everybody we fight above our weight class when it comes to culture, sports, intellect. This tiny region produced at a global level massive amount of talent. And when I go in the world, people remind me, and I give an example why this is so.
Before you go there, what's the population of the West Indies ballpark figure?
I would say the whole basin is about 40 million. That's the whole basin. I don't want to take an island.
No. That means you're including the Greater Antilles and the Lesser Antilles.
Okay, 40 million.
That's a good number. And barely over 10% of America, and could still and per capita could still hold its own as it relates to anything with America.
That's correct.
Yeah, man.
That's correct. And I'll just give you just a few examples. And there's a reason why this is so. But let me go back to the reason why. Because of the transatlantic system that the Europeans created. Mm-hmm. This transatlantic system, by its very nature, had an element called the transatlantic slave trade, where Africans from mainly West Africa, Central Africa, came to the Caribbean or the rest of the hemisphere, but mainly in the Caribbean, and the Caribbean became a region of profound African influence demographically, culturally, in every sense of the word. So outside of the African continent, the Caribbean Basin is seen as a sixth region of Africa because the African influence is profound. Because of how that has occurred, right, the level of African retentions here in the Caribbean is greater than African retentions in North America.
Yeah.
Not because we are better, it's because of the reality of the culture, right? So you have a situation where, a modern situation where the modern Caribbean person is detribalized in the sense that he's not Igbo, Yoruba, Ashanti, but also we're Africanized, know that we have a sense of culture, so we're clannish in our culture. Here in the Caribbean, we're clannish. We have a sense of closeness that borders on tribalism because we're not fully detribalized, right?
Yeah, man.
We are also exposed to European culture, Asian culture, other cultures, and we have had a time to pick and choose which aspect of European culture is good, which aspect is worthless. So
the applicable word here is intravenous. Our behavior is biological for a reason.
That's correct.
Yeah,
that's
man.
Correct. So we have enough time. We have struggled enough. And I've read books that say the Caribbean is known as a basin of resistance. We have resisted the colonial experience enough that we could pick and choose. So is that surprising? We produce a party.
But with reason. That's what we're going to let them know. We're not this way by accident. We are this way because we were forced to be this way.
That's correct.
And that's one thing. Yeah.
So I was saying to my students, because it's a big Bob Marley movie. I haven't seen it yet, but I've heard the reviews. So one of my assignments is that they have to analyze Bob Marley. How does Bob Marley represent the Caribbean experience?
Mm-hmm.
Now, my students are so young. That means they're 17, 18, 19 years. They really don't know Bob Marley. They know the music, they know the image. So they don't know who's Peter Tosh and who's Jimmy Cliff. So I have to explain to them, you know, the Bob Marley story represents one aspect of the Caribbean reality. How a person may have mixed ethnic origin,
yes, sir.
Yet loyal.
Yes, sir.
Loyal to his region, loyal to Africa. That doesn't mean he can't interact with European, and that doesn't mean he doesn't have.
No, but Malik, the important part is that mixed ethnic background is common with literally, I'd say, 95% of the region. Right. I mean, when you look at a perfect example is Camille Pizarro, right?
Mm-hmm.
His mother, I think she was from Dominican Republic, right?
Yes.
And his father was a European. Right, I think he was a Jew. You know what I'm saying? That's classic example. And with Bob Marley, his mother, 100% African, his father from Delaware. You know what I'm saying?
Not Delaware. Don't put it on Delaware. He was a white Jamaican of English, or in fact Welsh English.
When was Bob Marley in Delaware?
Bob Marley's in Delaware because his mother was in Delaware to live.
Oh, his mother was in Delaware. Okay, I had it mixed up. Thank you for correcting me, Professor.
Don't put him on Delaware.
Yeah, yeah. I thought his father was American. I was American from Delaware, but that's not the case.
English.
English. Okay. English and lived in Delaware. Okay.
Yeah, No.
The mother lived in Delaware. No. Yeah.
Mother, exactly.
Yeah.
His father died when he was 10 years old.
I'm using
a Bob Marley story to say that in the Caribbean Basin, many of us have different origins, indigenous, Taino, Caribbean, or African, or Asian, or European.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same token, the African culture is predominant. So the mixture of heritage doesn't mean now that the African culture is not pervasive. It has an impact on how we speak, our music, our dance, our food, because the demographic is heavily African. So it's not surprising, given that dynamics, that situation, that the leading scholars of this region begin to promote the ideas of Black consciousness, Pan-Africanism, Negritude,
yeah,
nationalism. So here is where St. Thomas is where Edward Wilmot Blyden was born, for instance, in 1832. He is seen, he is called the father of Pan-Africanism.
That is correct.
And not just him, later on,
And in doing so, made his mark on another side of the world, another side of the ocean.
Of course, the Liberia and Sierra Leone. And if you read any of the modern scholars who talk about Africana studies, the heavyweights like Du Bois in America, Padmore in Trinidad, T.L.R. James, they all read Blyden, Garvey, all of the heavyweights that emerged in the latter 1890s into the early 20th century. They read Blyden, and they perfected his ideas, took his ideas to a higher level. That's what he did in intellectual development. You read Neville James' book, and you say, okay, Neville, forget this. Let me add this here. You read Malik's book, and say, Malik, you need to add this here. That was the way our people develop intellectuals. You read each other's work, and you critique it.
So it is no accident. It is no accident that we've had century-to-century impact over the years. No accident whatsoever.
Of course.
Wow.
And so I must add this with Blyden. Blyden came back to St. Thomas in 1862 looking for people to join him in Liberia.
Mm-hmm.
And he got the moral support, but not many people joined him. He went to Barbados and got a shipload of Bajans to come, return back to Liberia with him. So I'm saying that the global view that Pan-Africanism promotes has been incubated here. Not just him alone. Here comes Frank Crosswhite, born in St. Croix. He left St. Croix as a teenager, went to the States, became a heavyweight in the labor movement.
Mm-hmm.
Another one is Elizabeth Anna Hendrickson. She left St. Croix, a heavyweight labor movement. Another one is Ashley Totten, a labor leader from St. Croix again. That's three crucial.
Hubert Harrison, great orator.
Hubert Harrison is seen in the Pan-Africanist world. He is seen as the person who introduced Garvey to the New York.
Introduced Garvey, that's right. That's right.
To the New York audience. If there was a Hubert Harrison, there would be no Marcus Garvey. So I'm just saying...
I like to refer to, because people believe that economics or people of color are just about a hard day's work for a hard day's pay. But we've had great business minds over the years. I like to reference Leidesdorf, right? Who was from St. Croix and the West Coast of America. He was in New Orleans for a little bit, but the modern day San Francisco, which was Yerba Buena back in the day, a Danish West Indian is who find that tongue, man. San Francisco today.
That's correct.
Again, so it goes on and on. Speaking of which, right, I want to touch on this real quickly. The Waiko Dock, right, over there, because remember now when I read why the Senate didn't support the deal back then, and they were talking about commercial interest, what have you, and the Waiko Dock is clearly a commercial entity. Explain to the public that the Waiko Dock, the name Waiko aimed by A for style. We were actually, the Virgin Islands was actually owned by the Danish West India / Guinea company, right? It was a company thing, right? And then Denmark took over afterward. Explain, break that down for me, up teacher. Help me out.
You said that fast as if you're a bullfighter.
I am a bullfighter. I am a bullfighter. I am a bullfighter. Hey, Malik, I make 16 hours now, so you know it is.
well, you're right in the sense that there was a company of this similar name, but that the company referring to had been disbanded. So this present WICO is like a
leader. No. The current WICO, no. I'm saying back in the day.
I know.
Two different universes altogether. Thank you very much. Yes. Go right ahead. For the benefit of the audience. Go right ahead.
So the words say that this WICO here owns slaves and therefore
No. I apologize for that. You're absolutely correct. I shouldn't have done that.
The Danes, like all other Europeans in the early 1600s, created joint stock companies that led the way in the colonization of this region. The Danes created the West Indies, and Guinea Company to be engaged in the transport of Africans from West Africa to here in the Caribbean, and they wanted St. Thomas to be the base. And once they established their first colony in Charlotte, Amalia, St. Thomas, then they spread to St. John, then to St. Croix.
Let me stop you right there. I think we owe it to the public to let them know the years that we're dealing with here, right? The first purchase was St. Thomas in 1672. The second purchase was St. John in 1718, and then St. Croix from France in 1733. So it wasn't all at one point. It was three different years.
I don't like correcting your English occlusion. It was not purchase first. The first settlement in St. Thomas actually was in 1865. And this was some real gangster stuff now.
Yeah.
Eric Schmidt had brought over a set of colonists to St. Thomas, mm-hmm. and the English base in the BVI sent some pirates to plunder the place, mash up the place, because the British considered St. Thomas still a part of their colonial realm.
Mm-hmm.
And so the British or the English pirates, they call them privateers, which is the same as a pirate, but a pirate with government sanction, plundered the place. The Danes run when back to Denmark, those who survived. And it's by the second time, the Danish king made sure that the English agreed that this settlement in St. Thomas is legitimate and not to raid the place. So,
we had two annexations: one in St. Thomas and one in St. John, before St. Croix came into the fold in 1733.
That's correct. But I'm making a distinction because it wasn't a certain thing. The St. Thomas being a Danish colony wasn't written in the stars. It wasn't something divine to that.
Agreed. As a matter of fact, the company went bankrupt. And that's how Denmark took over in full. So it was a company dynamic with annexation for St. Thomas and St. John, right? But on the St. Croix side, that was a purchase in 1733. We don't like to use the terminology because, as you said, it could be deemed as insensitive. But for the purposes of discussion, that's all it was.
As a matter of fact,
Malik. That's a good point because as right now the NBA, right? They don't use the term owners anymore. They use governors, right? because that earache dynamic that you're talking about, a predominantly basketball league of color, they were offended by that terminology, right? They said, we're done with that owner thing. Use a different term, and that's how governor came up. So that's a good point you brought up there. We're going to take our final break. I want to cut you off. Final break, and we'll come back and wrap up this awesome discussion here today. We'll be back right after this.
UVI's annual fundraiser, Afternoon on the Green, is back on Sunday, March 17th from noon to 5 p.m. on the UVI Golf Course on St. Thomas. Enjoy mouthwatering dishes, music by RVP Band and Shaw HP, plus face painting and bouncy houses for the kids. Register online for the best dress and hat competition. Visit aog.uvi.edu. Sponsored by VIA, VI Council on the Arts, Hogland VI, and First Bank.
Morning Edition takes you across this country and around the world with stories that keep you informed and the context to understand what matters. The news comes at you quickly, but we slow it down to examine each story from different angles and give perspective on what might happen next. A brand new day comes with new possibilities and a new edition of Morning Edition from NPR News.
Morning Edition, weekdays at 5 a.m. to 8 a.m. on WTJX FM 93.1.
You know a good story when you hear it. Makes you feel, laugh, think. Sometimes you get a little teary. I'm Scott Simon, host of Weekend Edition Saturday, and each week we bring you stories from around the country and around the world. Stories that help you learn, make you smile, catch you by surprise. Please join us every Saturday for the news you need and the stories you won't forget.
Weekend Edition, Saturdays at 9 a.m. on WTJX FM 93.1, your NPR station in the Virgin Islands.
There are many complex issues that arise in our territory.
Comes with the Territory with Leslie Comision.
Join me, Leslie Comision, for a breakdown of political issues facing our territory, one conversation at a time. I'm here to be the voice you can rely on for information that is straightforward and comprehensive. Tune in to be a part of the discussion. It all comes with the Territory.
Comes with the Territory airs Sundays at 1 p.m. and re-airs at 7 p.m. on WTJX-TV, Channel 12.
And we're back here, Analyze This, wrapping up an awesome discussion with the one and only Malik Sikou. Professor, Educate the Public, what's the name of the class that you're teaching, that you're referencing?
I teach an important class called History 342. It's called the History of the Virgin Islands. And despite what some people think, this class has been taught every year for at least the past 25 years.
Oh, that's good.
And the university has always taught VA history. I went to the school years ago. I took a class to graduate. So we've had VA history taught at UVA forever. Mm-hmm. And if I could, like, segue to return to earlier comment that one of the complaints I've heard is that VA history is not taught in our schools. I disagree with that perspective. I believe it's not taught consistently.
There we go.
And what is being taught needs to be upgraded.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we have to be creative in how we teach VA history so that it's not just VA history. If you want to teach VA heritage, there should be classes on language, VA dialects, culture, VA songs, VA music, VA cuisine. The way you infuse a love of a people is to address the different aspects of our life, not just a specific course. So at a university level, you only take one VA history course. You do not take the same class over and over. In American political system, American society, you don't take the same class over and over. You may take classes within a field so that you take, say, geometry 1 year, trigonometry another year.
Yeah, calculus. Yeah.
You take biology 1 year, chemistry. So you take different aspects of a field.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're teaching VA heritage, 1 year might be VA history. Another year might be VA geography. Another year, VA music or culture. So I believe the people who have been...
So you're suggesting that might be a way to structure the curriculum,
yes,
at the high school,
yes,
level?
Yes, and if it can...
Or even junior high school as well. I think it's actually started junior high school.
From pre-K to college.
Yeah, because the Roger Hill book, he actually said that he was for fourth graders. So
yes,
that's at the elementary level.
Correct.
Yeah.
That's correct. So for instance, you know, the other UVA class called Political Science 401, which is U.S. VA Government and Politics, which is a political class.
Mm, okay.
So VA history is history per se. VA politics is politics. They're not the same. Politics are the same as history. So if there's a course called VA Music, that's a separate area.
Correct.
Or VA Song and Dance, that's another area. Our culture is so rich that you can subdivide it into different areas and do a good job. Now, and if the courses are not easy to create, then you could infuse it in existing classes so that, let's assume you're teaching a geography class. then the Caribbean geography class would include a special section on the VI. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, so no, geography, be careful because geography is my first love. So, you know what I mean? When you start talking that, I will just turn off my mic and just listen. I think geography is such a beautiful thing that people don't really understand. But I'm going to digress. Go right ahead, sir.
Well, and let me say this, for instance, for geography, there's a saying, there's an expression that geography is the mother of history, right?
That's right.
So if we study in VI politics, VI history, in the St. Thomas, St. John district, you cannot discuss our politics or history, discuss in the BVI. The Tatola is not my way from St. John.
That's right.
And our cultures are interwoven. The families are interwoven. We cannot separate it. So here it is. We have on paper two different countries, U.S. and British, U.K., but it's one people.
That's right.
Likewise with St. Croix, the Via Kinsey, the Via Kiss imprint in St. Croix is multi-generational.
I enjoy saying this multiple times on this show from time to time. All our supermarket them were owned by folks who migrated from Puerto Rico. Right?
That's correct.
Camacho, Obando, Santiago, Calderon, the list goes on and on. You know what I'm saying?
And the Eastern Caribbean ties are profound. In fact, some would say that the Eastern Caribbean ties began from the 1730s. That when the Danes purchased, or rather acquired, St. Croix from the French.
But before you leave today, I just want to put this in your head. I want to know. 1733 is arguably the greatest year in the history of the Virgin Islands.
Yeah.
St. John, and St. Croix, I want to leave out St. Thomas. I love her to death, but I mean, something significant hemispherically happened in St. John in 1733, and then of course the acquisition or whatever term we want to use, or St. Croix coming into the fold. How about that? St. Croix coming into the fold in 1733.
Well, I'm glad you said it that way because and this is according to Isaac Dukan's book, The History of the U.S. Virgin, History of the United States, he said that the Danish West India Company, West India is a Guinea company that at a time was controlling St. Thomas and St. John, has suffered three losses because of the insurrection in St. John. That means the brave fighters, the Aquamulet fighters in St. John, had caused so much damages that to recoup their losses, they looked at St. Croix as a viable place.
Malik, till now we come into the rescue, man.
I ain't making this up. This is what Duke, and from the Danish and the European Danish point of view, St. Croix was the economic rescue of this project.
That's what it is.
And when they acquired St. John and it became formally transferred in 1734, the rationale was that you had to recoup the losses. And from thenceforth, we become three in one. That the Virgin Islands became a unified society in a modern sense from 1734 onward. Because of that situation, yes, it's interwoven.
The breadbasket of the Caribbean, man. Not just the Virgin Islands, the Caribbean. Right, just on the big land. You know, go ahead. Like, I want to bring
it and before I forget this point, and that the Danes looked to the existent Creole European planters in the region to be the planters in St. Croix. And these planters brought the Africans who were in the Caribbean to St. Croix, and then they imported more Africans. So the Crucian connection to St. John and St. Thomas is deeply tied to an economic situation. But over time, the African population repurposed, redefined the relationship so that we're not just talking about, we were somebody else's property. No, we become one people. This is our home now. So I'm just saying that if we start off one way, we change. And if I can quote your boy Bob Marley, he says, the stone that the builders refused became the chief cornerstone.
That's
so
right.
even if we were just seen by the Europeans as slaves and rejected stone, we turn it around to make this place our place.
You mentioned how rich our culture is, but I believe it has been stated and it's proven that our mere environment is equally as rich. John F. Kennedy came here to give a speech, and he said, we paid $24 for Manhattan and $25 million for the Virgin Islands. And I just left Manhattan. So clearly he must have been here in the winter. I think it was like a November or December. He said, I just left Manhattan and we might have overpaid for Manhattan. He said $24. $24 versus $25 million. And he said, I just leave Manhattan. And I believe we might have overpaid. Right? In other words, the reason why I brought that up, Malik, is because we got so much attributes here. And we are underperforming, in some instances, non-performing. And this is decades, man. I'm just being candid. We got more to get. And we got to do something about offering. Because as it stands right now, right, we really should be a regional leader. And to, in my opinion, we're not where we should be.
Well, you take the discussion where...
I set up the second part.
It's like playing basketball. I'm Steph Curry, and you get a chance to get the position, you throw the ball, and then hit a three-pointer. I want you to hit that three-pointer
from 30 feet out. Yeah.
The VI, right, despite its small geography and small population, has limitless potential. We ought to be the Singapore or the Kuwait of the Caribbean.
Yes, sir.
We must be the mecca for development, and it is an internal challenge. I hear some people talk about the external issues that confront us. I would just put it aside. The biggest challenge we have is creating that internal sense of purpose, that consensus of goodwill, and finding creative ways to create better unity of the population and finding creative ways to apply our God-given talents to prosper. And there's a Jamaican slogan in their motto, out of many, we are one. Mm-hmm. The same applies to the VA. Out of many people, we are one people. This doesn't mean we can't sometimes celebrate our separate heritage when it suits us, because I love to be pro-African. Others want to be pro-Palestinian. Others want to be pro-European, pro-whatever. But when it comes to our modern conditions, we have to find a way to unify to overcome our problems. The Virgin Islands problems can all be resolved, but they can only be resolved if we, the people, find a common unity, a sense of purpose, and resolve to overcome these issues. Our challenge, biggest challenge, is that we have allowed unnecessary divisions to divide us. I emphasize unnecessary division.
Well, use a man like to reference Bob Marley, right? He said, "In the abundance of water." Right?
Yeah, the fool is thirsty.
The fool is thirsty. And unfortunately, right, decibel level politics tend to get the best of sound decision making. And that can't happen. It shouldn't be happening. And that's unfortunate, you know? And some people, don't get me wrong. People got a right to support who they want, right? But don't tell me I send my child to college because I didn't get to go. And then when your child come home, tell them, well, take what you get until you can get what you want. No, sir. I can't buy into that, Malik. Under no circumstances. I cannot.
Well, I would add to that. It's a mentality issue, too.
That's what it is.
We tolerate nonsense as a people. We are too permissive of mediocrity. We don't seek to excel always. So I went to high school here, Charlotte Mali High School, and our motto is to excel always. I grew up at a time in St. Thomas in the 70s, same time you grew up in the 70s, where I had the beauty of seeing black consciousness expressed through Rastafari in its early phase, reggae being conscious, and community teachers of all ethnic groups, all races, who had this view that the sky's the limit, nothing could hold us down. The idea that something could stop us was unthinkable. I see today a self-defeating attitude of us believing we can't do for ourselves. We're finding reasons to be negative. So I want to end by something I heard you saying about education.
Mm-hmm.
There was a time in this community, mothers and fathers would move mountains for their children. There was a time when if there was any issue with school, parents would protest. I'm not sure if I ever told you this story in the past, but in my childhood, there was an incident here in the West, here in St. Thomas, October of, I think, 1970, when there was a flash flood that led to two girls getting caught by the flash flood, one drowned. And my then foster mother, with the ladies in current terrorists, women like Yidelta McBean, led a protest, had a protest to then Governor Melvis Evans, and they demanded that a school be built in the West. The school that was built was now called Gladys Abraham, but
it was a tragedy that led to that school being constructed.
Yes. Wow. Anybody my age who from the West remember that it was a tragic. Mm-hmm. It was a massive downpour. It happened in 1970, if I'm not
mistaken. Wow.
And
you're not going to look it up, because I got to be part of the discussion we have next time, because it starts from 1970, come forward with self-governance.
Well, several things happened too, I'll tell you what happened in 1970, 71, that was important. Yeah. That was the year that Evans was involved in the first electoral, the first elected governor's race.
Yeah, so man.
He promised people that he's going to fix the problem. What else happened that year, earlier than that year? There was a major fire. A gas fire also occurred in the West. That was another issue. Then that fire is important because the fire occurred close to a school called Ramboko. In those days, the Eastern Caribbean.
Yeah. Doc School, and Doc School told me about that a couple weeks ago. Yeah, so these are the things, and I don't want to cut you out because we got 1 minute left. I don't want to be rude and all that stuff, right?
No problem.
But the thing is, but I'm glad that you went there, because that will serve as a perfect segue for us picking up the discussion. One thing I want to tell you, they want you on a live stream, so if you could come over, we could do a Zoom or something next time. Let me know. Let me know. Come make it work. They want to see where all this brilliance coming from, Malik Siku. So, you and I going to talk and see if we could do this virtually, or if we could get you over on the Big Island. So, just think about that. Okay? And I believe the date, we're going to change the date to Tuesday the 26th. Okay?
We find a way, if it's possible, but you see the problem with that is that...
I know. You walk in, I know that. That's why the virtual thing is probably the best. Tuesday the 26th, we'll pick this up. Malik, great discussion. Thank you very much for making the show a success to them. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much. Have
you
got it.
Yeah, that's Malik Siku joining us. Great discussion. And of course, you're not the history person that I am. He told me about those two incidents with the flood and the Carib gas situation there by Ramboko. So, thank you very much for listening. Thank you very much, Mary Angeles, as well. Don't let the weather service. Be good and be safe. Talk to you tomorrow. Bye-bye.
The views and opinions expressed on Analyze This are entirely those of the on-air participants and do not reflect those of the station's board, management, staff, or underwriters.
Weekday mornings are a juggle, sometimes even a struggle. Morning Edition from NPR News eases you into your day and keeps you company through the chaos of a busy morning. Hear interviews that give you context on the day's biggest stories, along with reporting and updates on the latest breaking news. Stay on top of the world with Morning Edition every weekday.
Morning Edition, weekdays at 5 a.m. to 8 a.m. on WTJX FM 93.1.
Human beings have been making music for tens of thousands of years. It brings us together. It has the power to communicate emotions and ideas. It's a profound part of the human experience. Hear the stories behind the music you love and new music you might fall in love with. I'm Raina Duras. Join me for in-depth interviews with artists who are continuing that musical history on World Cafe.
Weekdays at 10 p.m. on WTJX FM 93.1.